It's Dale's Radio, and I'm with Lizzie Emery, who's a rather inspirational lady who's had an incredible journey in her life, battling with and surviving and recovering from terminal cancer. Hello, Lizzie.
Hello, Julian.
It's lovely to speak to you. Can you tell me a little bit about your story? Tell me how you first came to be diagnosed and how you came to learn to live with battling cancer, and then how you got over it.
Yes, well, I was really fit at the time. We'd just climbed Monte Rosa, which is the second highest mountain in Europe at over 15,000 feet. And I came back looking weather-beaten and really, really fit. But shortly after that, I started to get stomach problems, which eventually led me to go to the doctor. I took a while because I was rather afraid of what they would find. After some weeks, I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which my GP told me was definitely terminal. And he said that he had one patient who had survived for 11 months, I think it was, with chemotherapy.
Right, so that must have been a devastating bit of news.
Yes, I mean, he told me on the phone, and he started off by saying, this isn't good news, so my heart sank. And of course, the first thing I did was, I said, well, how long have I got? You can't help yourself now. But that's one thing I would encourage people not to do. I think to have a prognosis is a very bad idea. I wish that doctors would say, well, we don't really know exactly how long you've got to live, but there are an awful lot of things you can do to help yourself, and that they might point you in the direction of some books or maybe a club or something at the hospital where they can help people to have hope and tell them what things they can do to help themselves.
So really, given the prognosis, really, is in your opinion, a bad thing? Because you'd rather not know. You'd rather get on with life and make the most of what time you may have left.
That's exactly right. Although, in a sense, it gives you a goal to beat, if you like.
Well, I suppose there is that.
No, I think on the whole, very often, it's so dispiriting for people that they just give up. And also many people have this feeling that the doctors can do what they can do and that's the end of the matter. So they don't start looking at all the other things that I looked at to see how I could recover. I chose my own journey. I did go down the chemotherapy route because I thought it would buy me time. Pancreatic cancer is notoriously swift. I also immediately started building myself a team of people who could help me. I went to a local homeopath who was also a wonderful counsellor, and she's a really good friend now. I did on the Skype a meditation with a man who lives in London, and he was also really inspirational.
So from the very outset, there's no way you were giving up. You were quite driven by it and looking at every possible way that you could get help. There must have been dark moments for you.
Oh, there were, especially immediately. Both my husband and I were devastated. And then we had to start thinking about what are we going to tell the children. My daughter had just moved to the other side of the world, and my son lives in Sheffield. Not good to break this sort of news on the phone, as I had already experienced. But we felt we couldn't hide it from them, although we had been a bit reticent until the diagnosis came, because we didn't want to frighten them unnecessarily. This is also a big decision for cancer patients who to take. Do they tell people? In my case, I was losing weight so rapidly that everybody who saw me would have known I was very ill. And also, if you tell people, then you can get their support. But that's another big issue. Another reason why I wrote the book about my journey was to help people, help cancer patients, because there are so many things you can say that are really devastating and not helpful. For example, a friend of mine who has a brain tumour, another friend heard about that and took her a book on poems about death. So that sort of thing, it just isn't helpful. And actually, this friend is very, very good. She helps me to see things with a sense of humour, because another person sent me a card and said, what would be if you do not get better?
Yes.
That also is a bit of a poser. And my friend said, oh, well, you can just say, just cut me off your Christmas card list.
That's quite a dreadful way of looking at it, but that's the reality, isn't it, in a way?
Yes.
And so how on earth did you get through it all? You've talked about all this help and support. At some point, there must have been some light at the end of the tunnel. You thought, actually, I can conquer this.
Well, my husband and I have always felt we had a healthy diet, but my first thing was to look into diet and see what else I could do to improve it. And I think one very important thing for cancer patients is to avoid sugar as much as you can. Eat as much organic food as you can. I don't mean as much as you can. I mean as much of your food as possible should be organic. And also to avoid things like processed food, red meat, I gave up. When I told my oncologist what I was doing diet-wise, he said, oh, that must be very difficult. And I think this is the problem. People think, oh, that's too difficult. I can't do it. And so they don't even try. So So that was the major thing to start with. And then I read a very good book called Radical Remission by a woman who had done research with over 1,000 cancer patients. And she'd drawn up a list of things that they all said had helped them. One thing is taking control, which you've already suggested, I think. Taking control of your own health, not just sitting back and doing just what you're told. You should follow your own intuition. And then I had to do work on my personality, releasing suppressed emotions, increasing positive ones, embracing social support, and very importantly, deepening my spiritual connection, which is what I did through meditation.
Yes.
And focusing on having strong reasons for living. Well, that was quite easy for me because I have a very supportive husband and family, and also I have lots of hobbies and interests. So that's what you should do. Concentrate on living.
Lizzie, one of the problems that people are experiencing at the moment when they do get a cancer diagnosis is the long waiting list. And that must be horrendously hard for people to get the diagnosis and then think, I need help now. Why have I got to go on a waiting list? This is really important.
Yes, I found that hard enough. It took me 3 months from the first interview with my GP until I started the chemotherapy, and I already felt that I'd lost a lot of time. So yes, I really sympathise with people in that situation.
I mentioned beforehand about the light at the end of the tunnel. Something must have turned. There must have been a moment where maybe one of your specialists said to you, actually, there's some good news here. How did that feel once you realised that actually there was a longer term future for you?
I used to have regular scans, obviously, when I was having the chemotherapy, and so it was very, very helpful to know that the tumour was shrinking. But I think mainly the hope came through my homeopath, who told me I could heal myself, and from the person who did meditation with us, and he did say I have lost some, but you could tell from the way he was speaking that the attitude of mind was important, and I just determined to do everything that he told me to do. My husband meditated with me. We meditated every day for half an hour. We had one day off at the weekend, and we prayed too.
Yes.
We are Christians, and it was just this faith that God shares his creative and restorative power with you if you want to.
And so once you'd had this turning point, really, I suppose, in your treatment, it was then, I suppose, an uphill battle to recover and to get yourself well. How did you feel then?
That's right. I mean, I always had this idea in my mind that I might only have a year. So I was using that as a target to beat. It is a bit of an uphill journey. It's often two steps forward and one step back, and you have to keep picking yourself up and telling yourself that you're doing all the right things. But gradually, my confidence increased, and I started to be able to take pleasure in all the things I used to do, like walking and sewing and reading. The great thing is having the support of your family around you. That's so important.
And I suppose without their support, there's a big hole, isn't there? So having family and friends around you is so critical to the recovery.
That's right. I mean, especially because most of mine really believe I could get well. And a lot of people said that to me before we'd even told them what we were doing, that we really believe you can deal with this. And that was a tremendous help. People should say that and be willing to talk to you. When you're at your lowest, what you just need is company, really.
Yes.
And a big thing is, I think, for people to look out for, what does the person want? What do they need? Do they need to be quiet? Do they need to laugh? Do they need to go out for a walk and forget it? It's important to do what the person wants. So often people try to impose on me, oh, you should do this. You should go to a hotel and let your family come and visit you. Well, there are times when you don't want to see people. So it's great to have a partner or a friend who can be your social secretary, if you like, help you say no to things.
Did writing the book help you as well?
Did actually. They say, don't they, that writing things down does help you to get over them. But that wasn't the reason that I wrote the book. The reason I wrote the book was that I felt there was such a gap. I'd gone into the library myself in the first week because I didn't want to use the internet because you get too many scare stories on the internet. I went into the library to get a book which would help me, and I didn't find one. And so gradually, as I began to get better, I thought, yeah, I'd like to communicate this to other people. It took me about 4 years to write it. And sometimes it was hard reliving what I'd been through. And other times, yes, I think it helped me to put it behind me.
Now, the book is called Shout It From the Rooftops, A Terminal Cancer Healing. Why did you choose that as a title, Shout It From the Top, From the Rooftops?
Well, I was talking talking to Keith one day, my meditation guru, and I said I was worried about the effect that my being ill might have on my husband, because he had suffered from depression in the past, and I was worried that he might go to pieces. And Keith said to me, you're not the only one who has benefited from this meditation, you know. I think, I'm sure that your husband is going to be absolutely fine and you should shout it from the rooftop. So there was a ready-made title.
Absolutely. Now, the book is available from Castle Hill Bookshop in Richmond and also from the health food shop in Finkel Street. But I believe you've got a talk coming up as well.
That's at the library where I didn't find my book. I actually did ask them if they would take my book, and they have got a copy of it now on the shelves, to
Brilliant.
My great delight. So yes, Wednesday, the 6th of April, from 10:30 to 11:30, I shall be chatting to people as part of their regular coffee, cake and chat session every month, first Wednesday of the month.
And so anybody is welcome to go along and have a chat with you then.
It'd be great to see lots of people there, and I'm hoping that they'll come with lots of questions, and that maybe they will have a friend or a family member that they want to help, or they may even themselves want help, and I hope I will be able to give them some ideas of what they can do.
Lizzie, you truly are an inspiration, and it's lovely to talk to you. And I'll just reiterate, Richmond Library, Wednesday the 6th, 10:30 in the morning, for coffee, cake and a chat, and an opportunity for people to meet you and perhaps, as you say, pose questions to you, and perhaps you can give them some inspiration too.
I hope so, Julian.
Lizzie, lovely to talk to you. We wish you all the very best and good luck with that book as well. It does sound like life has turned a corner, you and your husband and all your family, of course, because it'll have impacted them too. And we wish you a happy and healthy life.
Thank you very much indeed, Julian. It's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks, Lizzie.